Hello and welcome to the call. I know that we have both Carol and Amy on the line, so that's great. We're going to interview Carol first, and then we'll move on to Amy. But I'd first appreciate it if everyone except Amy and Carol would kindly hit the *6 buttons on your phone so we can mute all background noises. At the end of each half hour, we're going to take a few questions, and at that time, if you want to ask a question, you can push the *6 button and we'll be able to hear you. Okay, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Dotsie Bragel, and I'm founder of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which can be located at nabbw.com and boomerwomenspeak.com, which are the number one sites on major search engines for baby boomer women. My passion is educating and empowering women at midlife, and I've been doing that since launching boomerwomenspeak.com in 2002. I love to create opportunities for women to explore their passions and live life to the fullest. You can find out a lot more information about me and the association and the websites online. So instead of taking up time to talk about that now, I would just encourage you to visit the sites. If you are not a member of the NABBW, the fee to join is typically $75, but if you're on this call and you're interested in joining, we'd be happy to send you a link to join for $50. All you have to do is email info@nabbw.com, and we can send you that reduced link to join. Okay, the teleseminar today is just one of many. We have over 60 teleseminars archived in the members-only area at nabbw.com, and they range in topic from, employment, which we're talking about today, actually re-employment, to, we've done them with like one of the top surgeons in Manhattan for having different procedures done to our faces and our bodies, et cetera. And we also have lots for women entrepreneurs at midlife and heart and health care, et cetera. So anyway, those are all yours when you become a member of the association, and they're archived. You can either listen to them or read them because we've had them all transcribed. All right, let's just get started. I'd first like to introduce Carol Orsborn. Carol, are you there?
I sure am.
Okay, good. I'm going to read your bio, and then we're going to talk about this, okay?
Okay, great.
Dr. Carol Orsborn is an author, marketing veteran, and thought leader on issues related to boomer women, adult development, and quality of life. She serves as VibrantNation.com senior strategist and blogs regularly for the peer-to-peer information sharing website for smart, passionate women 50+. She's previously served as senior partner with a marketing to boomer woman firm affiliated with a top 10 advertising agency as the senior vice president with a global public relations company and as co-founder of an international initiative dedicated to internal and external communications targeting the boomer generation. In the late 80s, she founded the self-help organization Superwoman's Anonymous, which is a pioneer of the simplicity, life balance, and business consciousness movements. She's the author of actually 16 books on generation-based issues in work and life, including her latest book, which we're going to be talking about today. She received her PhD from Vanderbilt University, and she served on the faculties of Georgetown University, Vanderbilt University's Leadership Development Center of the Owen Graduate School of Management, and the doctoral program in organizational leadership at Pepperdine University's Graduate School of Educational and Psychology. Okay, Carol, welcome to the call. How are you?
Oh, my gosh. You know, it just reminds me how long I've lived.
That's a good thing.
That is a very good thing. Enough degrees, though. Enough books.
Okay, tell us about your book, just like the title and what moved you to write it, and then we're going to jump in with some questions about, you know, how the boomers are being affected by this recession.
Oh, sure. The book is called The Year I Saved My Downsized Soul, A Boomer Woman's Search for Meaning and a Job. The book is a memoir of a period of my life not that long ago, in fact, at the very beginning of the recession, before we knew it was a recession, when the global company I was working for was looking at downsizing, and you could feel the tension in the air, and I had the feeling I had a big bullseye on my back because I was one of those people who was a thought leader, but I didn't have billable hours to show for myself. It wasn't part of my job description even. And so I've written many of these books are advice books about how to live a better life, how to be resilient, you know, spirituality and success. And when this was coming down the pike at me, my spirituality kind of flew out the window, and I had to consciously retrieve it. So every night during this period of being downsized, job hunting, and there's a happy ending to the story, I journaled and tested my spiritual principles and found out which ones worked in a period of transition like the one that we're in, as opposed to which ones were, you know, nice ideas.
Okay, good. All right, well, I guess let me just explain the way this is going to work. Carol's going to talk a little bit about what happens to us personally and how to go about managing a layoff or, you know, just what we go through in our minds and also spiritually and how we can make that spirituality work for us. And that's the first half hour. And then the second half hour, Amy Hoster is going to talk more about specifics. Okay, we've been laid off. We lost our job. We've learned how to take care of ourselves. We're going to work on that. And so now, how do I get back? How do I get another job? You know, what do I do about job fairs, and what do I do about my resume that hasn't been updated in years? What do I talk about on an interview, et cetera? So first, if you could just tell us, Carol, how are boomers' jobs being affected by the recession?
Well, we have been very terribly affected at a time when many of us have simultaneously seen a lifetime worth of savings dwindle. Mm. So it's not a great time for us, either work-wise or financially. The men of our generation have done somewhat worse than us. Women have held in there a little bit better, but the issue is that there's still many, many of us who have been downsized, and when we are downsized, there's many studies showing now that the boomers are much less likely to get a job. It's going to be the amount of time that they're going to be unemployed is going to be longer than people of other generations generally, and I'm sure Amy's going to have some ways to cut the time down, and I have some things I can tell you that will help you through the transition no matter how long it takes.
Okay, talk to us then about some of the attitudes and, you know, what accounts for the differences in the way one person might handle a layoff compared to another person.
That's a really good point. Social scientists have been studying people who are resilient, people who are faced with much greater things and challenges than, I don't want to minimize what we're going through, but you know, people who have studied the survivors of the Holocaust, gang members who've resisted being in gangs, people who've lost loved ones. I mean, there's all kinds of challenges that we're faced in our life. And what they have found is there's sort of a through line of things that people can do to make this period of their life go better for them. And again, I didn't go through this as a social scientist. I went through this as an individual, sort of stumbling and bumbling my way through. So yeah, I'm going to try and share both with you at the same time. But, you know, the very first thing you have to do is, first of all, the very first thing is remember to breathe. I have to say when you are hit with an unexpected blow, especially for those of us who are at the peak of our careers and thought we would be celebrated with laurels in our hair instead of pink slips, you know, it's really important to know that you are not alone and that you will survive, and to take the time to grieve this loss. It's a huge loss, and I think, you know, some people, the mistake I made is, you know, I thought that I wasn't even going to take that moment to allow myself to feel the sadness and to, you know, be really kind to myself, because I thought I would just jump right off of one horse that was trotting full speed ahead onto another horse that was even running faster. And again, in my case, you know, I immediately put out a bunch of emails and thought I would be snapped up immediately. And I don't know if it was good news or bad news, but I got an immediate positive response. But the thing was is that in this economy, some of us are getting job offers from people who really think that they want to hire us, but it's such a volatile market right now that job offers are not always coming together when you expect them to come together. So, you know, it's very easy if you don't get snapped up right away to start to think that, you know, you really have failed and that, you know, something wrong with you. And I went through all that kind of stuff. And, you know, a turning point for me was when my husband, who's a great support to me always, but especially during this time of trial and transition, said to me, you know, I was flailing around saying I'm broken to the core, you know, nothing, you know, and I'm in bits and pieces on the floor. And he looked at me and said, you know, Carol, it's the economy that's broken, not you.
Right. I remember seeing that in your book and also on one of your list of the 10 topics that you talk about. And I think it's such a great comment. And I think so many people need to hear that because you do take it personally when, quite frankly, it's really not us. There's just so many other things that, you know, are happening beyond our control. But it does boil down to one person or many people losing their job, and then how do we interpret that? So a good interpretation is that it's the economy that's broken, not us. But where do you go from there? I mean, you know, you kind
right.
of say, okay, I need to, that's true, but I need to pick myself up. I've got right. to present my best self. And how do I do that when I'm feeling down and broken?
Well, okay. So step number one is you got to tell the whole truth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you take your fair share of responsibility. If there are reasons or things about you or your expectations, or how you're being on your job that weren't working for you that may have contributed, obviously this is a great moment for soul searching. I know that for me, the truth was is that I wasn't doing what I really wanted to be doing anymore. I didn't really want to be in a corporate environment anymore. And, you know, you don't want to talk about it as a gift, but on the other hand, I guess I would call it a wake-up call to ask myself, you know, well, what is it that I really want? Forget about how it looks to other people or what I think I deserve and all that. The second thing is, and I don't know where Amy stands on this, because right now we have sort of a split in our spirituality as a generation. Many of us still think positively when we can, you know, and I do my best to be positive and to think positive. But I also came to understand that there are limitations that many of us are facing, and some of us are facing them for the first time.
Right.
Some of us have not had to deal with age discrimination, which, again, you asked about what our generation is facing, and there's study after study, which is that, you know, age discrimination is real. It's not that you can't get around it with some cleverness and luck and strategy, which I think Amy will supply us. But the fact is that, happily, I come from a spiritual philosophy that honors limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And talks in terms of what are achievable dreams. So, you know, I think that this notion of embracing limitation as a spiritual stance can be helpful for us. There's a great philosopher, Rollo Mayer, who said that, you know, without a banks there would be no river. And so I keep that in mind as I think to myself, well, you know, the dream, I mean, I once wanted to be a Broadway dancer, you know. That didn't happen for me either. But I think sometimes we, you know, well, can I tell you a little story? I think
yeah, sure,
a
sure.
story to illustrate. One of my good friends a few years back said that, you know, she really, really wanted to be a poet, and that she felt that what she had to write was so deep and so wonderful that the world would support her in it. And so many of us tried to talk her out of it because she had a very secure job. Actually, it was with the Social Security Administration. We said, you're just a few years from retirement. For heaven's sake, just hang in there. You know? But she said, no, I've got this passion.
Mm-hmm.
And so she went to her aunt, and her aunt said to her, you know, dear, when you look into your heart, it sometimes works out better for you financially if there's an investment banker inside.
Very good advice. That's true, because, you know, at the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, we often talk about following your passion, but you do have to be realistic. And I think that's, you know, our generation wants to follow our passion at this stage of the game, but because of everything that's happened financially in the world, many of us are just saying, oh, my gracious, you know, we're behind how many years now with retirement or whatever, and you know, we're not able to follow the passion as much as we would like to just yet.
Well, you know, I think that I'd like to just respond that I think what we need to do is become passionate about achievable dreams.
Right. That's a good point. That's a very good point.
Mm-hmm. We still need passion. You know, I don't want to do anything without passion. I'm the kind of person that if I have to wash the dishes, I'm going to find some way to make it passionate. What we are as a generation and is, you know, we're resilient. We are resourceful and resilient so that we do have the ability to become flexible and adapt to changing circumstances. And somebody once said to me, she was looking at poop all over the place and cheering. And her friend said to her, why are you cheering at all this poop? And she says, you know, because I'm looking at all this poop and I know that there's going to be a pony nearby.
There you go. Well, how is it possible to keep your spirit up while job searching? You know, and what if you've let it get you down?
Well, first of all, I do surround myself with people who love me and believe in me. And you have a website and also Vibrant Nation where I am senior strategist. Now, that's a happy ending to my story. I think the surprise, I think, for many of us is how much support we can get online as well as in person. I think it's a whole new toolkit than we've had in the past, and it actually allows us to reach out beyond. I may have great friends, but I didn't have a friend in my own personal network group that had a friend who knew of a website in the social marketing space that needed a boomer expert. You know, we become so niched in what we are that we
Right.
need larger and larger communities to help us out. And so I think that the web, if you're smart about, you know, finding out who are your peers on the web, I think there's this there can be this sense of abundance. I certainly see it in the boomer world that you and I are in, the boomer marketing and boomer spirituality world. There seems to be,
thank you,
you know, a sense of collaboration and of wanting to help each other, much more than I remember when I was younger in many of the fields that I was in that were much more competitive.
Yeah, and you know, Amy is going to talk about the idea of using social networking to find jobs at midlife. So, you know, in addition to the forum communities, there's also the social networking that needs to be a piece of all of this, not necessarily for support, but for opportunity.
Yeah, well, so let me just skip to another attitudinal thing, because I'm sure Amy's going to have that covered
mm-hmm.
well. And that is, the other thing that I learned is that, I grieved, I cried, I nurtured, you know, I did all that good stuff, and I kept waiting for my great attitude to, like, descend before I would start, you know, reaching out.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found out is that sometimes you have to begin taking action before you're thinking positively. And I learned this great exercise from a friend of mine who talked about bracketing the pain, and that is, I think we tend to go to extremes. We tend to either go completely into the pain and grief and we become immobilized, or we try and suppress it and put on this happy face and just push on through no matter what. And I'm a great believer in honesty, vulnerability, balance, all those kinds of things, and discipline. And so this bracketing the pain exercise I learned is that you figure out the size of challenge or pain you're in and go and buy a candle that's about the same size. So if it's a pretty big thing, you buy one of those like ones that are like a foot tall and are going to take a couple months to burn.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is every night you do this little ritual where you say, I'm going to light this candle for 15 minutes or whatever. And while that candle's burning, you let yourself feel all of your feelings, you know, your panic, your fear, your sadness, your loss, your, you know, you're certain nothing's ever going to work out for you again. You let yourself feel that. But when that 15 minutes is up, you blow it out and you get on with what you need to do. Put out your resumes, put out your emails. You know, I believe in God, and I believe that God can make great things happen for us regardless of our attitudes. I mean, I've had good things happen to me when I was in a terrible mood, and I've been in a great mood, and things have gone wrong as well. So in my own spiritual life, I feel a little less powerful than I used to feel, but more taken care of ultimately.
And like you mentioned, Carol, you know, you really have to keep your spiritual eyes open, especially when you're going through something like this, because you'll see, I think, if you're wearing them, then you definitely see more of the blessings. And I think, and I know you still kind of have to get through the piece where you find a job, but I know some people who have been laid off and have now found work that they like better. That they just feel like it's more of a fit, and that, you know, it's not always the case, but sometimes change can be good. You know, like,
well,
you're saying.
That was true for me. And here's the deal is that, you know, I've always thought that when I was in this transition, I thought, well, I'll get the job and it'll make me happy. I had to get to a place where I had my faith restored, where I felt like life was meaningful, that I could be okay no matter what. First.
Right.
And then the job came. And again, it didn't look like my last job. Frankly, it was half the pay and no benefits.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're right. I think that, you know, there is that that sense of becoming passionate about what you're doing, and it doesn't necessarily have to be something glamorous. I think you can bring great passion to being of service, even if you end up serving coffee at Starbucks. I mean, I've seen some remarkable people in jobs that you would think would be far less than what they were equipped for. But they're, you know, again, that resourcefulness and resilience we're talking about is, you know, very much along the lines of you know, the Zen master who says, you know, first enlightenment, then you do the laundry.
Right. Right, so basically your message is, because we're going to have to tie things up a little and see if anybody has questions, is that really when going through this, as in going through any kind of upset or disappointment in life, that it's really smart to stay focused on your spiritual side. And in addition to that, not only while you're waiting for that job, but even once you get that job.
Yeah, if I was going to leave you with one learning, it's that it would be that it's true that life teaches us that we can't always stop bad things from happening, but, you know, you can't stop good things from happening either.
Right. Very good. Good. Now, you know, you do have a list of 10 things, and I know we've mentioned a couple that are in your book. Do you want to talk about a couple more? We have just a couple minutes before we see if anybody has a question for you.
Oh, sure. Do you have a list right in front of you?
I do.
Which ones are of interest to you? I do too, but are there any in particular you want me to know?
Well, I like the one about not everything that happens is a message. Sometimes a rat is only a rat, if you want to just talk about that, because I read your book and it that really stood out to me. I mean, sometimes we just become so dramatic and so worked up that we think anything and everything that happens around us, you know, is horrible and has to do with the job loss, so...
Well, we live in a canyon in Los Angeles, and so there's wildlife around. And the day that I was downsized, I came home, and a rat had gotten into the house, and there was dog food and shreds of paper everywhere. And I remember thinking to myself that this was a sign, and that, you know, I was going to lose the house, and I was going to be end up as a bag lady. And... that didn't end up being the case, but I really did have to sort through the fact that, you know, we do tend to read into the things that happen to us at times like that, you know, overly read in. What really emerged for me is offering me hope. The place that I went to is just to realize that no matter what the last job had taken away from me, and no matter what the rat's challenge was or whatever, that I have gifts and I have value, and that sooner or later that I would find somebody I wasn't done yet. I just knew I wasn't done, that there's somebody out there that would need what it was that I had to offer, and I just had to keep an open mind and check out and test out relationships and situations that were out of the box for me. And in fact, you know, here I am making my living in the social networking space, a field that Dotsy didn't exist for us 10 years ago. I mean, we didn't. Who would have thought that this would be our primary identities?
Right. I know when we went online in 2002 with Boomer Women Speak in our forum community, it was the first one.
Absolutely.
And now it's become a way of life for women to connect online and get information, et cetera. So, all right, let's see if anyone on the line has a question for you. Anybody want to talk to Carol? You can push *6 if you muted yourself and ask a question. And sometimes it takes a second for people to get up their nerves, so we're going to just wait a couple seconds here, and then we'll see if anybody has a question.
I have a question.
Okay, sure. Go ahead.
Well, and this may be more applicable for the next speaker, but I have not recently lost a job, but I've been out of the workforce for several years as a taking care of my children,
mm-hmm.
and I'm having a very, very difficult time getting an interview. Yet, I do have very good work experience, and I have my master's degree. I just feel, oh, and did I mention that I'm turned 50? But I have young children, so I don't look 50. But do you have any advice for someone in my particular situation?
I think Amy's probably going
to. Yes. Amy is going to talk about how to get the interview. So it's quite possible, that she can address that. Amy, are you on the call?
I am. You know, we're going to talk about all the things that you're going to need to do that's different from when you were in the job market prior. That's
okay.
Really what my specialty is. So why don't we go ahead and hang out, and if I don't answer your question, we'll pick it up on the backside of the next segment.
Okay, great.
Sounds good.
What was your name?
Patricia.
Patricia. Okay, thanks, Patricia. Does anybody else have a question for Carol before we move on? And if you think of something, Carol is going to stay on the call. So, you know, if you think of something and then, you know, want to speak up at the end, you're welcome to ask then. Okay, Carol, thank you so much. I'm a very faith-based person myself. And so I read your book and I was like, yes, it was just so refreshing to me that someone was addressing this very particular issue that has to do with boomers from a spiritual perspective. So I'm just really grateful for your book and for all that you've had to share. So
thank you so much, and I'll look forward to hearing from Amy, and I might have a point or two to kick in.
Okay, sounds good.
You never know.
Okay, so next, introduce Amy. Amy Hoster is employed by Dominion Enterprises, publisher of the Employment Guide, as the business development manager for WiserWorker.com. Dominion Enterprises is the world's largest publisher of classified advertising material. WiserWorker.com is a career resource website with a comprehensive job board dedicated to providing quality employment opportunities and resources to the largest demographic group in the country. You guessed it, the baby boomers. So really, if you are in the market, I highly recommend that you look at the site, and that's WiserWorker.com. And Amy has given us this employment guide that we are going to, actually it's a resource guide, the Wiser Worker Resource Guide that we are going to send to all of those who registered for the call. It's an excellent resource. But anyway, she's been involved with the recruiting industry since 1999, and she earned her Bachelor of Arts in Business Management from the University of Phoenix. So Amy is going to give us some of the tips on, you know, how to really get back in the workforce. So how are you today, Amy?
I'm great.
Good. Okay, do you mind speaking up just a little bit? You might be on a speakerphone.
There you go. I'm on the speakerphone.
That's perfect. Oh, thank you so much, because we're recording this, and then we'll transcribe it.
No worries. I'm doing great today. I'm very excited to talk about this topic.
Good. Okay. Let's just talk about what is the right kind of resume at midlife, because just like Patricia, who asked the question, she's been out of the workforce for a little while. I know there are many other women who raised their children and stayed home and are now, you know, getting back in the workforce, and resumes look nothing like they used to. Mm-hmm. In fact, a good friend of mine just told me that her daughter helped her with a resume, and she's like, how's that for role reversal? And I said, it's perfect, because she knows what she's doing now. You know, she just graduated from college, and she's learned how to do the latest and the greatest. So can you tell us a little bit about the right kind of resume for us at midlife?
Yeah, Patricia kind of said something that really caught my attention. She said that, you know, I'm 50, but I don't look like I'm 50.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what the problem is with today's resumes. My mom was a teacher for 36 years ago. She was a teacher for 2 weeks while I was a baby. And she wanted to reenter the job market 2 years ago. And she said, well, I'm going to use the same resume. I said, well, Mom, it's typewritten. You can't do it. You know, it's not search engine optimized. It's not, doesn't have the keywords you need. It isn't. It's talking about what you did 30-some-odd years ago. What we need to do is take all the skills that you've acquired over the years and apply them back in such a fashion that somebody's going to want to not only read your resume but call you for an interview. When you turn that resume in, the biggest common mistake is you turn it in, and because the baby boomer generation has been taught that, you know, if you turn something in, you'll get a call, we just wait. That's the biggest mistake you can make. So taking a step back, what you should do with your resume is create something called a functional resume. And make it apply for what type of job you want to get. And let me give you an example of that. I spoke with a gentleman a couple weeks ago at a job fair. And he has spent his entire adult career in the clinical field. And he wants to find a part-time job doing something, but he doesn't want to be in the clinical field. So I said, well, let me see your resume, because he said he can't get any interviews. Nobody wants to call him back. Well, he handed me his resume that was 3 pages. And all it did was describe all of his experience in the clinical background. And I said, well, this is great if you want to go back into the clinical environment. But since you're not going to the clinical environment, what you need to do is change your resume over to a functional resume and pull out the management experience, the customer service experience, the training experience, and highlight that in a functional resume. And what a functional resume does is it portrays a picture of what you can do for a company today, not what you did for somebody 30 years ago. And the other nice thing about it is usually a functional resume is one page. And it's a real neat, tidy, concise document that you can give a recruiter, an HR manager, a real clean-cut picture of who you are, what you can do, and how you can do it. And that's really the type of resume you need. Now, I sent two documents over to Dottie. One was the Wiser Worker Survival Guide. And another one was a one-sheeter on maximize your resume, maximize your results.
Yes.
And that's something that if you guys can just, if you take a moment to pine down your resume, you'll see the results flourish. And I actually have a couple of programs that I work with that will help the older worker or anybody of the age 50 kind of fine-tune their results. So if anybody wants to contact me, I can put you in touch based on geographical dimensions with those groups.
Okay.
The second thing that kind of gets you the interview with your resume is to put together a real nice cover letter that's pretty detailed, that gives you kind of a snapshot of who you are, real quick, concise, no more than 250 words. Usually it's sent on an email cover letter. Just to give somebody a reason to look at you. because that's really what you want to do. The third thing to do is really the most important thing to do to get that resume, to get that in front of the right person, and to make sure that you get the interview. You need to follow up. And when I say follow up, I mean, when you send out your resume, hopefully you've researched what kind of company or what kind of job that you want to do. And if you know it's a good fit, there's nothing wrong with you calling and checking up. Hello, I sent you my resume. I'm just wondering if you might have a definitive answer on when's the best time that you'll be setting up appointments. Just, you know, there's something to be said right now about the a little bit of aggression goes a long way. I'm not inviting you to become a stalker. what I'm inviting you to do is to put your best foot forward. I think if Patricia, if she were to send the right resume in and say, call and say, hey, you know what, I've got all the right backgrounds and skills and abilities to best fit your position, I think that she might find that little bit of ingenuity is going to go a long way.
Right. They may just a lot of times it depends on the mood of the person answering the call. You just never know. But you just might catch them at the right time where they're like, oh, my gosh, I was just thinking that I've got to fill this position. You don't know, so you really just have to put yourself out there.
You know, and the common response I get when I tell people that is, well, gosh, they may not call me back. Well, there was probably a pretty good chance that they weren't going to call you anyway. I mean, you got to realize that when you send a resume in, they get right now, hiring managers are getting resumes by the drove. So that's why you need to create a resume that is concise, drill down, get seen, and you also need to do the due diligence to make sure you're the candidate that they're going to call back. Mm-hmm. So make sure to just put your name in there. I call it job stalking, just to make sure that you're the right person who gets seen. Because chances are, if you turn your resume in for something, it's something that is a good fit for you. Studies show us that baby boomers and older workers aren't resume vampers. That's where you just throw resumes out to 500 companies.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, when this age demographic turns resumes in, they're taking the time to research the company and the position. So we know that you're a good fit. You just need to let the hiring manager know that you're a good fit. And sometimes that takes a follow-up phone call.
Okay, let me ask you, Amy, is there a place on Wiser Worker where they can see an up-to-date resume?
I do have a functional resume that lives on our site.
Mm-hmm.
The best place is to that Wiser Worker Survival Guide that you're going to send out.
Yes.
And if anybody wants a hard copy of that, I have 75,000 of those books that I just printed. So I'd be more than happy to mail you out a hard copy of that if anybody desires that.
Okay, and you can they contact you for that, or do you want them to?
Absolutely.
Okay. And give them, you want to give them your,
sure.
It's amy.hoster.
H-O-S is in Sam, T-E-R,
mm-hmm.
At wiserworker.com.
Okay, and I'm going to send the electronic piece. Let's see. We need to probably move on. Do you have anything else to say about resumes?
Nope. It's just the best thing to do is we're right now creating a resume online tool that will be live in about another month.
Mm-hmm.
But if anybody has any questions in the short run, you can also contact me, and I'll get you over to the right person to help you out.
Okay, that's fantastic. Okay, now, you talked about making links in the resumes and,
cool.
You know, using keywords, et cetera, so they're searchable. Maybe we should move into the importance of the whole social piece online.
Yes.
Okay. You want to talk about that? Because that is something that many boomers are doing, but some aren't. And
And
some are kind of, you know, a little afraid of it. But I believe if you really need a job, then you have to warm up to it.
Social networking is—it's strange. When I got involved with social marketing 3 years ago, I remember saying with LinkedIn specifically, only people on there—that's just a big old job board. Well, it's not. It's a social marketing side that where you can post your resume, you can make incredible business connections, and there's—I could talk about LinkedIn for hours. That's just one of the sites that really, if you get on integrate your resume in there. That thing can just steer you to many jobs and many employers. You can network on there. If you join a networking group on LinkedIn's group section, you can, it's like attending a live networking event 24/7. You can read documents, leave information. It's, social marketing is essential in today's marketplace, especially in today's labor marketplace. You really need to be able to get your name out there, intermingle with all the social marketing, the Twitter and the Facebook. You could really drown yourself in it. But the best place for anybody to start out is creating a LinkedIn page. Don't bother yourself with the Twitter or the, you know, the Facebook, because really the best place for you to start is on LinkedIn, because that's where employers search. That's where people like myself post things on Job Find. I put my blog on there where I talk about job search. But really the two most important things are making sure your resume is searchable. And that's by putting certain technical words in there that would be picked up if your resume is scanned. And I know that just sounds really scary, but what I mean is when you submit your resume to a company, a lot of times what happens is it's scanned into a client management system. And then a recruiter picks up specific words in your resume. So, for instance, if you had an accounting background, you might want to use the accounting buzzwords such as account management, accounts receivable, departmental budgeting, collections. You guys get the drift.
Yes.
So you want to really fine-tune your resume and use the buzzwords. And what you can do is if you go to Google, you can go to Google Trends and pick up keywords. And what you could do is type in the job that you're looking for, customer service, and it'll give you all the keywords. And then you can incorporate those into your resume. That document I mentioned prior to this little speech is will give you a real quick rundown on how to do that. But it's really important. It's important to get yourself out there and intermingling. And the really nice thing about social marketing is that I tell people the best way to start is just to jump in feet first. There's absolutely nothing you can do wrong that can't be fixed. It's really a nice way to get your confidence level up, because you can start small, and within a couple of weeks, you'll be amazed at how much of an old pro you are at it. It's something that you can learn at your own pace. I started at night when nobody was around. I would sit and enter stuff on LinkedIn and just kind of search around and get comfortable, and that's really the best way to do it, because chances are whatever position you go into is going to require some of these skills and abilities, and the better that you can learn that stuff up front is going to prepare you better for the backside of it.
Okay, and I'm sure there'll probably be some questions about Google Trends, et cetera, but
yes.
These are awesome hot tips, because I'm very familiar with Google Trends. And and
that's why I put all this in that document.
Yes, that's wonderful.
Because I know this is just a very broad overview, because really I could spend an hour on any one of these topics. So.
That's right. Okay. All right, let's move on then to what to say and what not to say in an interview. Because that has, good Lord, has that changed in like the past 30 years.
Yeah, it really has. The baby boomer generation tends to answer any question that they're asked with full volume behind it. And the best policy I think a job seeker could adopt is to answer the question in a concise fashion. Don't go in there and offer everything from your mother's maiden name all the way down to what you did last week. Recruiters want a broad overview. We don't really want to know that you didn't like your boss and you didn't get along with your coworker, or you know that you stayed at home for the last 20 years to mind your children. What we want to know is what you can offer me today. And the least amount of information you give on that fashion will get you the furthest. Don't talk about, you'd be amazed how many people come in and talk about how much they disliked their previous position. It blows my mind how often it happens. But what we want to hear about is what you liked about what you liked about the position, or what you're looking for in the future. Are you looking for this position because you want to work part time because you're reentering the job market? What skills do you bring to the table? Are you a good mentor? Do you intermingle well with coworkers? We just want to know the short, concise answer. I think often people they're overly nervous in an interview, myself included. And I think we talk when we're nervous, and I think that's kind of what happens. But the best thing to do prior to going into an interview, go online and Google interview questions and come up with like a top 10 questions that you could be asked and craft answers to those questions.
That is such great advice. I've got to tell you, I recently put together an interview for women making a difference for the National Association of Baby Boomer Women blog. Mm-hmm. I Googled interview questions, and I was reading them, and I could not believe some of the questions. They are incredible. They're very good, and you can get a lot of information from some of those questions. Now, that's not exactly what I was looking for my interview, but I was just poking around and saw that, and I thought, good Lord, what a good tool this is.
And it gives you the ability to have an answer crafted. And even if you change it in the interview, it gives you the ability to at least have thought about it. My least favorite question is, what is your five-year plan?
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? I don't know what I'm doing next week. But by the way, that's not a good answer. But to be able to craft something so you're at least thinking about it, my second least favorite question is what is your biggest weakness?
Yeah. Yep. I saw a lot of that on there.
Yeah. I don't like to file, but that's really not a good answer. What they mm-hmm. what they want to hear is that you're aware of your weakness and how do you compensate for it. So what will happen is if you can prepare yourself for potential questions that you're going to get in that interview, what's going to happen is you're going to prevent yourself from falling into the common pitfalls. And it's really, I'm telling you, if you could prepare for yourself for their interview, I tell you what, you'll be less nervous and less, there's a lesser possibility that you'll run with the mouth with things that you're going to regret.
Right. Well, Amy, it sounds like, and I believe unless you're being asked specific questions, you should be forward thinking. You know, you shouldn't go back to the past jobs. It's like that's behind mm-hmm. you, and then, you know, let's look forward, and this is what I have, and this is what I can do for you. And you're also saying less is best. Don't get in there and just, you know, rattle away.
Yeah,
stay focused. Yeah. Short, concise answers. Okay, anything else? Because I know you can go on and on about this,
which
is wonderful.
Really, that's the best thing to do for an interview is to, and now I think I'm going to write a blog tonight about that, is to craft. I would go through all the interview questions that are out there on the Internet, maybe pick 10, and then in your mind craft an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's always better if you know what the answer is before you walk through a door. And if you can prepare yourself for that, you'll be miles ahead of the game.
Okay. And what is your blog address, Amy? You want to share that with everybody so they can follow you?
I do. It's on my website, but it's blog. How exciting, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is blogblog.wiserworker.com.
Okay. blog.wiserworker.com. Okay. Very good.
And I update that probably twice a day.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, let's see. Let's talk a little bit about job fairs. I don't know how exciting they are these days, but I know they're out there, and I know I've seen pictures on TV of, like, people waiting out the door to go to job
mm-hmm.
fairs. So do they have a purpose for the person at midlife?
They do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I think of a job fair is as follows. Job fairs give you the ability to test drive a job. It gives you the ability to go into a room and learn about six different companies and all the positions they have on the table. versus if you were going through the paper or on an online website. You have to really imagine what the job is like.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to a job fair and you get to physically touch and feel a job, actually probably shouldn't touch and feel a recruiter, but if you talk to them and you can learn about the position, you can find out more about that company, and it gives you a flavor for what that job and or company is going to be like before you even could imagine applying for a position.
Okay.
I like I said, I like to refer to it as test driving a car. Kick the tires, sit in the seat and figure out what it's going to feel like. And then, you know, you might find a company that you never would have heard of or you didn't even know of. It might be the perfect fit. So the best way to experience a job fair is to go out and try one out. You can probably find one in any given city on any given day.
Mm-hmm.
And every single job fair is completely different from the previous. Always have fresh copies of your resume when you go to a job fair. And always be ready for an interview. My biggest pet peeve is when you go to a job fair and you see people walking around with their kids or they're not prepared for an interview. You really should, if you go to a job fair, assume that you're going to get interviewed and be prepared for one. But that is really the nuts and bolts of the job fair. They're in a time where the economy, the job market's a little bit more robust, job fairs are more fun. Right now, our job fairs are a little bit more cumbersome attendance-wise, but they still, for the baby boomer generation, are awesome. That's how I started Wiser Worker. Wiser Worker actually was a job fair series.
I recall that.
We held 48 job fairs. Yeah, we do it every September. And we did that with the mindset that baby boomers and older workers would want to come out and test drive a position or kind of get to know what somebody was like or what a company was like.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what the job fair looks like. But the best thing to remember is be ready for an interview and always have fresh copies of your resume.
Okay, and you know what? While you're talking about test driving jobs, I don't know if you're familiar with, because we haven't spoken about this, the vocation vacations. Are you familiar with that, either of you, Amy or Carol? It's a website called vocationvacations.com, and what this guy has done has set up this incredible opportunity for people to test drive their vocation. So,
awesome.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to be a radio talk show host, he connects you with a vacation someplace in the country where you get to work beside a talk show host.
Awesome.
But it's anything and everything from, like, if you want to be a chef. It's just so unbelievable. And then, of course, there are opportunities for you to be the mentor. So if you like your job and you know, somebody wants to test drive your job, you can sign up for them to do that with you. It's a really neat concept. And while they market to everyone, they especially market to boomers because I just think that, you know, it's a good opportunity at midlife, and oftentimes, you know, some of us are switching gears intentionally, not because we've been laid off, and it's like, okay, now what do I want to be now that I'm still growing up?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's vocationvacations.com. It might be neat for both of you to connect with them. Okay, we only have about 5 minutes, but I have one more question, Amy, and that is, how do you get an interview? Like, do you have any special techniques for getting them, or is that pretty much what you were talking about before with, you know, the follow-up and following through and just really putting yourself out there? Okay, so we've pretty much covered that.
Yeah. You know, if I could leave you with one final thought, it would be this. Leave all your self-vanity and embarrassment behind. A lot of times people don't want to do something because they're afraid of how they're going to appear.
Mm-hmm.
You're a name on one side of the phone. I mean, nothing you can do is going to be so horrible that you're not going to get a little bit step further. I think if I could give you one piece of advice is take a chance.
Yes.
Take a leap of faith. kind of forget everything you learned 30 years ago, step into what we do now and embrace it, and ask people for help. I really liked somebody, I think it was Carol, that said that she knew somebody that had to ask her kid for help. And my dad's a computer programmer for a major bank, and I teach him Excel all the time. I think the neatest thing is you need to embrace all the tools that are out there, and don't be afraid to ask for help.
Yeah, and you know, Amy, that's how I've grown my business online. I have just day after day, honestly, for years, just put myself out there. Oh, well, I'm just going to email this person and see what they think. You know, and that's how I got all the associates for the association. I found their books or I found their websites and said, you know what, I'm just going to ask them. I would just put myself out there.
Yeah.
And I just think we have to do that. We cannot be afraid. There's just really nothing to be afraid of. What do you have to lose? It's basically one person.
Absolutely.
So, okay, does anybody have a question for Amy? If so, and you've pushed the star six, please push it again so we can hear you. Okay, does anybody have a question before we move on? Okay, Carol, do you have any comments? I don't know if Carol's still there.
I think we must have lost Carol.
Maybe we did. Okay, well, Amy, I think you did a wonderful job.
Thank you. And I
just really appreciate your enthusiasm because boomers need that. And I'm excited to send the Wiser Worker Resource Guide around. I'll also we'll also send that other attachment. And I will say that it will be out by Friday. We'll probably do it when we do the newsletter for this week. And if you want to repeat your website again, your blog address, and your email address, that would be really helpful.
My name is Amy. Dot H-O-S as in Sam, T-E-R, at WiserWorker.com. My website is www.wiserworker.com, and my blog address is blog.wiserworker.com.
Okay. All right.
All right.
You really enjoy your work, don't you, Amy?
I love every day.
That's good. Okay. Thanks, everyone, for being on the call, and have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello?
Hello?
This is Carol. Are we still on the call?
Oh, no. We just tried to talk to you, and you didn't answer.
My phone went dead in the middle of that. So, anyway, I did want to say goodbye.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, we just kind of asked if you had any other comments at the end, and then we tied it up. So,
okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And I really hope you connect with Amy.
Oh, yeah. How old is she?
She's younger. Did you see her picture?
Yeah, well, you never know from pictures.
Well, yeah, I know, but, I mean, she's definitely younger.
She sounded like she might be in her 30s, maybe.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, but she's very good at what she does.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she specializes in this particular, in the boomer thing? Or
yeah, yeah.
That's wonderful. Well,
yeah.
I thought it was a super helpful thing. That's great.
Okay, good. All right, well, I hope you connect with her, Carol, and thanks for everything.
Okay.
Bye-bye.